Okay. Oh, I hear the music. You guys hear that?
Say yes.
I love that.
David,
oh,
yeah. David, can you hear that? Well, yeah. That good. Yeah, awesome. Fantastic.
Can you pick that?
Hmm? Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, welcome to the show, everybody. And we have a special guest here. First, we have the regular crowd, Mark Cordes, Steve Klassen, Carrie Dozer, tan, rested, and ready from Hawaii.
That's right.
Yeah. And you didn't tell us last week about how you spent a couple of days in Hawaii.
Aside from the food poisoning,
sitting
it was
on
great.
The can.
Yeah, it was great. Excellent.
How did that happen?
Ahi tuna. Husband,
wow.
Wife, big ahi tuna roll, one hotel room, one bathroom.
I had never heard of that.
really bad.
What happens when, so you're in a hotel room.
Yeah.
And it's a couple, and they both have food poisoning.
How do you
fight for it? Yeah, how does that work?
The ice bucket. You sit on the ice bucket.
Oh, my God. There's a shower. That's all I have to say.
Oh, wow.
No, just kidding. After 14 years of marriage, we have this thing timed out pretty well.
Timed out? You can't time out food poisoning. What do you do?
Well, maybe you can't.
What do you? No.
That's, I can.
Really?
Yeah, pretty good.
Couldn't you, like, go down and use one of the restrooms in the hotel lobby?
No, there was
no
leaving the room for 36 hours.
Oh, that is gross.
Yep, you got it.
Boy,
what restaurant was that?
It was actually at the hotel.
At the Grand Wailea?
It was at the Grand
Wailea. Wow, that's
I'm sure housekeeping was in love with you guys after that.
We just put the Do Not Disturb on and called it a day.
That's a fun trip.
See you tomorrow.
That's fantastic.
Or the next day.
Well, now that we've cleared that up.
Right.
David, aren't you glad you came?
This is a fascinating story. I love Hawaii.
Yeah.
David Lewis, all-star writer, actor, and director, and pretty much doing all of this. We're going to talk about your upcoming play here. We want everybody to go. Playhouse on the Park. That's at the ground floor of the Viad Tower right there on Central. And it's Mr. Franklin of Philadelphia. Pretty cool. And David is a veteran of the local theater. We've actually written together and done some – we did a little television project together.
That's right.
Yes. And I think, you and your wife and me and my wife, we saw it.
Yeah, we were.
did anyone
well, that
else
was
see it?
The demographic we were shooting.
We were
for,
shooting, and we did
the
watch
four
it.
Of us liked.
We did watch it.
I watched it twice.
Yeah, me too. So it was really a tremendous job of promotion by Channel 8. If you ever really want to do a lot of work on something and really make sure everybody knows it's out there, put it on Channel 8 in the old days. Not the old days. A couple of years ago.
Yeah. About 6 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it disappeared on there. So anyway, we're gonna talk about Mr. Franklin of Philadelphia. I already learned one thing before we started, but we have to start the show like we always do. Now,
always,
always now,
yeah, always
now,
since
fall,
like 2 weeks ago
with Mark Cordes with his question
of the week.
Yes,
question du jour. Hey, you know what? I was just looking at this Marley's. They got their own bottled water. Look at the label with all the locations on it.
Mm-hmm.
Kids
wow.
eat free.
Kids eat free.
No.
No.
Kids always eat free.
Kids always
says.
Eat free.
By the way, we probably should do the show out of that Goodyear Marley sometime because everybody's raving about the Marleys out there. I actually am getting people sending me little things on Facebook saying, hey, you know, I was out at the Goodyear Marley's. It was great. Great place to watch
Maybe
a game.
Maybe just do it on Tuesday night during karaoke.
Oh.
That sounds bad. No, and nothing against their karaoke, but
just karaoke.
In general.
Yeah. Anyone's karaoke.
That's,
never seen that work.
That's combining people that shouldn't drink with people that shouldn't sing.
Yeah,
and
not
you good. Get the best of that world.
There's a country song right now that is like a number one song, and talking about we went out last night, and one of the things apparently two guys did was after drinking heavily sang I Got You, Babe, on the karaoke. Which probably sounded like a good idea at the time. The problem is everybody else in the place.
Yeah.
I wonder if the motive for the Guns and Bars bill had to do with karaoke.
So you could shoot the singer?
Well, yeah.
It's not bad. That is one of the few things our legislature got accomplished.
One of the pluses.
Last year. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
They got that done.
Guns and Bars.
Because, you know,
we need that.
God forbid you couldn't take your gun into
but
a bar.
But only if you're not drinking. Because let's face it, when you're in a bar, you make good decisions.
Yeah.
Some of the better things that have happened in history started.
We can't do a budget.
Bars.
We're $2 billion in the hole, but $1.5 billion
or
whatever it is tomorrow.
They got that done fast. That was a good one.
Yeah.
All right, here's the question of the week. And I came up with this as I was watching the excitable pennant fever in the remaining baseball cities.
Yes.
So, and we're all sports fans. And Ben Franklin, I'm not sure if...
He invented baseball.
He's a Phillies fan.
Phillies fan, right. And an Eagles fan. You are now the sports czar of Phoenix. All of us are.
Okay.
We have four major teams, which, by the way, doesn't count the Mercury. How about a shout-out to
them? Yeah, fantastic.
That's awesome.
That was great.
So, leaving them out, let's go with Suns, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, Coyotes. Right. Coyotes are still here, right?
Yeah.
Come on, today. Dude. They're right there. Right in the thick of things.
I meant still here in town. Okay. Yes, so you get to pick a player for each franchise.
Yes.
Ooh. And they gladly come here, or whatever their personality would be. If they're a pain in the butt, you're going to inherit that too. But you get to pick a team or a player for every team, one of those teams, and you get to replace one of our coaches
with
the coach of your choice.
Okay, I'll start.
For each team?
Yep.
Are we picking a player on the team?
One coach for all four teams. And you can pick anybody you want from the NBA. You can pluck
outside.
A guy out of there. And Oh, yeah.
Okay. You don't have to pick an existing Phoenix Sun.
There's no salary cap considerations. There's no givens. You have to give somebody up. You can bring somebody to town.
All right. I'll take Suns. I'm going to take LeBron James. And I am going to replace our coach. And I'll replace him with Mike D'Antoni. Okay. And I'm going to replace our owner. And I'm going to replace him with anybody.
Oh,
okay.
My.
Okay, now.
Ben Franklin.
Are we doing... Ben Franklin would be fine.
Okay.
Diamondbacks, I am going to replace the coach.
No, you can only replace one coach.
Oh, then scratch that. I'm going to replace the Diamondbacks coach then.
Okay, so we're going to keep LeBron, and you're going to keep...
what's his name? And
the name recognition.
Yeah, I'm going to take Mike Socia to manage the Diamondbacks. And one player... I'll take Derek Jeter. Okay?
And you're taking today's Derek Jeter.
Yeah, fine. Okay. We got time.
That's fine.
Okay, we got time. All right, let's win now. Here's an idea. Who else we got? The Cardinals?
Yep.
Ooh. Well, we could take the guy we didn't draft, Adrian Peterson, so we'd have a running game, but we don't want him because our line's doing so well. With. let's see. I don't know. Definitely, I like our coach. Who would I take there just today? I'll take Peyton Manning.
Oh, God. Takes all my answers.
And Coyotes, I like our coach. He's doing great. His four games. And I have no idea who I would pick because I don't know enough about hockey who I would pick.
I don't either, but I just...
Oh, you really want to know who I'd pick?
Yeah.
I would pick from Swedish national team, Igor Labonski. And he's an up-and-comer.
Made that up.
What?
He is the most famous of the Lavonsky brothers.
Okay,
you're going around the table.
It's hard.
Counterclockwise.
All right, I was going to take LeBron James.
LeBron.
But I was going to take LeBron. I won't because I refuse to cheat.
Mine.
I'm going to take Duncan. So we need a big guy.
What is he, 50?
Well, I'm going to take him 5 years ago.
No, that wasn't it. Oh, good. I'll take Wilt Chamberlain.
I'm going to replace AJ
Sandy Koufax. You're replacing him?
Yeah.
We have him tied down long term. We'll lose that.
I know. We're going to lose a lot of money on this one, but I'm going to take Tony La Russa.
Yeah, good pick.
And I get to pick a franchise player as well. God.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Vladimir Guerrero.
You like the old guys, don't you?
I like old guys. I'm very comfortable around them. They make me feel...
Obviously.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Wow.
Look at this table.
That hurts.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, hockey, I'm such an idiot. I
would go with Igor Yulbanski.
I'm going to go with your guy.
He's fantastic.
Right. And I couldn't name the coach of the Coyotes. I know he's new.
He's good.
Right. And I was going to take Peyton Manning.
You can take him.
I'll take Eli Manning.
Okay.
Wow.
All right, Steve.
Let's see. Well, with the Cardinals, I'll go with football since that's my sport. I will take Adrian Peterson.
Why didn't we take him?
I don't know.
He was positive he was coming to Phoenix.
Yeah.
Can you remember who we took in
his
stead?
Yeah, who did we take? I forgot his name. Who did we take? Is it Lewis? He's some guy on the line. It's a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
So I know who it is because he was getting abused Sunday. Yeah. They kept saying his name, and every time I hear his name, I think, Adrian Peterson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. No, we don't want him.
But, yeah, I would take Adrian. I mean, I think he's probably the best player in the National Football League.
What a joke that is that we didn't take him.
Peyton's a good choice by you. I'm with you. I like Coach Wisenhunt.
We're not on a limb on Peyton.
But if I had to replace Wisenhunt, I'd go for a guy who's retired right now who's probably going to come back, Bill Cowher.
Okay.
Solid coach, as there is.
Okay, move on.
NBA, Phil Jackson for a coach. He's running out of fingers for rings at this point. You got to give it up
to
the winner.
Yeah, I'll give him one.
Yeah, we'll see how he does with this team.
And the player, let's go with Kobe.
Moved to L.A.
I'm moving.
Kobe.
This will be L.A. East.
Well, Kobe's a good pick, actually. Yeah, I mean, man, he's hard to beat. Mark?
All right, I'm going to go with Dwight Howard.
Oh, yeah, good call.
That's a good pick.
I want a big force in the middle that's
biggest
young and athletic.
Wait a minute, we got Channing Frye.
And we don't have to we don't have to run plays for him. He'll just go get the ball and dunk it.
Yeah, there you go. What a concept.
Yeah. And then for football, I was going to say Adrian Peterson, too, because it would be kind of cool to get the guy that
we passed
on. Draft anyway.
Jesus. But our running game's clicking, so it doesn't really matter. We don't have it.
Exactly. Baseball, for the Diamondbacks, I'm going to go with Socha.
Yeah, he's great.
And
remember we sat right next to him this year in spring training?
Did we?
Moreno was sitting there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was sitting. There was a little fence between us.
Oh, there was a fence between us.
Yeah,
would he have been sitting with us?
No,
that would have been weird.
He wasn't in the stands, but it was like I was making a few cracks.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And Greinke for pitcher. We need pitching. Everybody needs pitching.
Yeah.
It's kind of key.
Mm-hmm. He's young. He's got a lot of. He's not a power pitcher that can blow his arm out. So mm-hmm. I mean, he's got that. But and plus, I'm from Kansas City, and I'd like to see him be able to escape the sub mediocrity of the
escape.
Royals.
You know, a friend of mine, and I think, do you remember this guy, Mike Ricola? Mike Ricola is a local lawyer and really helped me when I ran for AG. And he still plays baseball. He's a big baseball guy, and he represents that guy.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, out of the blue, I don't know how it worked out, but he. He didn't know that much about him. Turns out the guy's great.
And
but he's in Kansas City.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll get out.
Yeah.
Like they all do.
Right.
It's funny when, sidebar, when George Brett was inducted in the Hall of Fame, my dad called and said, well, isn't that exciting? Because he was always my favorite player. And he said, well, soak it up because he'll be the last Royal in the Hall of Fame. And I went, And then I went,
Yeah, he will be.
Yeah.
Because of, I mean, their outfield right now, if they wouldn't have got rid of these guys, would be Johnny Damon, Carlos Beltran, and Jermaine Dye. Kind of like we're starting to say with Carlos Gonzalez and Carlos Quentin.
That's right, the Carloses. We don't like anybody named Carlos, especially if they're a surefire hit.
Player, right.
Anyone named Carlos
Gonzalez.
Or anyone named Gonzalez, I'm for.
Oh, absolutely.
if you want to be a major leaguer, just make sure your dad's named Gonzalez. Because there's about 10,000 of them in there. Yeah, that Carlos Gonzalez.
He's the real deal. Yeah, we gave him away.
And hockey, Sid Crosby. Sid the Kid. Because he's the only
one. Good choice. Only one you can think of.
Yeah, only one I can think of. I knew another hockey player named Wayne Gretzky, but he didn't do so well here.
Well, yeah, that didn't work out. But, you know, that's okay. Well, I have a question here. And, Mr. Lewis, I have a feeling you're going to be an expert on this.
Well, we'll see.
Because we don't have any expert at the table. Maybe we do. I'm just going to throw this out here. Could someone enlighten me on what in the hell was going on up there in Sedona that 60 people or whatever would pay $9,000 to have a little weekend to hear how to succeed and wind up in a sweat lodge at 10,000 degrees where people are keeling over and people aren't leaving? They're just like, this is great.
How would you go in a sweat lodge?
I don't know. I mean, and the guy's not like a... You know, a Navajo or something. He's like, what's his name?
Yeah.
You know, Bill Bob Ray. Johnson
California.
Or something. Yeah,
right.
He's some cheese ball from
SoCal.
California. But what's that all about? I mean, it's amazing to me people would pay that much money to go have that experience.
Well, I think one of the real engines of our economy is wealthy white people looking for some sort of spiritual validation. Mm-hmm. And you've got a guy who says, come on. I'm going to sweat you. I'm going to purify you. I'm going to kill the old you, and there will be a spiritual rebirth, and it's only going to cost you $9,000 or $10,000 for the week.
Right.
So come on. Come one, come all. And then you cram about 60 people into a 20-by-20 room. I understand it had a very low ceiling, too. Somebody said it had a 52-inch ceiling. I don't know if that's true or not. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I couldn't stand up in there.
Really?
Yeah. Then you shrink wrap your sweat lodge with plastic.
Right.
Oh, God.
And the fun begins.
Wow.
That's my best guess as to what happened. And then the guy leaves. He says, makes a short statement to the police, hops on his plane, and flies back to LA or wherever he's from.
He gave a speech yesterday, and he was crying about it. So.
I'm sure he's crying about it. He's, shit, I'm going to jail. I just killed those two people.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of return business when they die in the sweat lodge.
No,
it's tough to loop them in for that.
They were so pure right before they died.
They were trying to get closer to their maker, and a couple of
them did. They succeeded.
Is that part of the deal, is though the kind of a rebirth? Is that the
one of his quotations was, you have to die. Part of you has to die. I'm not sure which part. In this case, all of you has to die. And then you can be reborn with this new, pure spirituality.
Okay.
And
makes some degree of, it doesn't make any sense, but if you're going down that path, you could see doing that.
Well, I think one of the letters in the paper the other day was from a Native American, and he said, you know, we don't charge for spiritual work. So that's a clue right there.
Right.
Now, weird thing, in that sweat lodge in the corner, there were a couple of slot machines. I thought, now that was pushing it.
That is a little much.
There's a two-drink minimum
in there.
Let me ask you, Grant, since you're the lawyer here and former attorney general.
Yes.
Obviously, somebody's going to have to be paying for this. Does the guy get charged with, what, negligent homicide, you think? I mean, it's early in the investigation.
That's a tough case. That's going to be a tough case to charge him with that. Yes, it would be some sort of low form of murder.
Well, they didn't get a building permit.
They didn't. They didn't have the right kind of permits and all that, which is, you know, that doesn't help. It's more likely to me, I would think he would end up. Actually, the prosecutor up there used to work for us.
What was it?
Sheila Polk. Is the Yavapai County Attorney. She's a very good lawyer, good prosecutor. She's certainly fearless. She'll do whatever she thinks she needs to do. I don't know. You know, we don't know all the facts. If it's just the guy is an idiot and he's packing all these people in there, and you know, then you've just got to say, okay, was that negligent? Yes. Was it reckless? Maybe. Enough so that you knew or should have known that someone might die from that or would die. Maybe. I would say that's a very tough call as a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. But obviously,
from on the surface.
And I've got to believe there's going to be a civil lawsuit, too.
Civil lawsuit, not so tough.
Yeah.
Now that I would jump all over. So 602-258-2599.
Wow. He's holding his card up.
Yeah.
He's not. Yeah.
Yes. No, I think that would be a good case. I'd take that case. I would love to sue that cheese ball.
I just heard about an hour ago that there was an incident back in 2005 where they had to haul somebody out of there and take them for medical. This guy's been doing this for years at that same property.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, now that plays into it. So if it's happened before,
then
and he didn't take precautions. And
then
all
you
that,
have a track record.
You know.
Well,
I'm not ruling out criminal.
Now, what if these people signed something that said that, you know.
Nah. It depends. I mean, it depends on what they sign. But generally, when people sign stuff like that, it doesn't mean too much.
Kind of like when you apply for a mortgage.
Well, you know, this is ask a lawyer. If you have, like, all the fine print, you know, and you say, well, you got to sign this, and you stick it in front of somebody, and they just sign it, and they try to stick you with that language later, that's generally unenforceable. That's called an adhesion contract. Like, when you get a parking... You know, you get your parking ticket, and on the back it has all this fine print. You know, we are not liable for jack and under any circumstances. Well, yeah, you are. Okay. You know, depending on what the circumstances.
This is like the people's court. I like it.
This is great. You know, my God, you know. That's right. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens on the sweat lodge here thing. Back to sports a little bit, although it's really not a sports issue, but what did everybody think about Rush Limbaugh announcing that he was going to try to buy the St. Louis Rams? Now, there's a big outcry on that, And I'll just give you a couple sides of this. One is the obvious, and that is like the players' union immediately jumped up and said, you know, this is ridiculous. The guy's a racist or a bigot or whatever you want to call him, and has made all sorts of derogatory remarks. He also got kicked off of Monday Night Football for a, you know, racially oriented remark. And so we don't want him, and we're not going to stand for it. On the other hand, the argument is even, you know, he has his views, and just because he's a controversial conservative, does that mean that he shouldn't be able to own a team? I mean, who knows what the views are of everybody else? What's Bidwell's views on things? I don't know.
Right. I would say, does he have a right to bid on the team? Absolutely. The National Football League, being what it is, has a right to determine who they want as owners. And he needs to get, I think, what, 24 owners, and Bob Irsay of the Colts has already said no. I think the league probably will have a problem with him because the NFL runs things very tightly.
Yeah, they do.
And they are not going to want this kind of controversy, especially with the owners and especially with things with, like, the Rooney Rule out there. Like you say, what he had said on the ESPN pregame show with McNabb a few years ago. And the other thing is, Checkitz, the other guy he's a partner with, I think fits the bill more than Limbaugh. Limbaugh is more just the money guy.
Right.
Most of the NFL owners, if you look at their history, they're businessmen,
right,
first and foremost. Rush Limbaugh is an entertainer. I mean, he's got his business, true, but he's more an entertainer as opposed to, you know, Bob Kraft with the Patriots or, you know, Jerry Jones with the oil industry or, you know, DeBartolo when he owned the 49ers with the shopping centers, whatever. You know, they come from a different background.
Right.
I think the league probably will have some questions.
Right.
Does he have a right to bid on it? Yeah. But, you know, he also has to play by the rules of the NFL, which says you need to get 24 votes. I don't know.
Is it okay to turn somebody down though, because you disagree with their views?
Yeah.
Their political views, not their views, not because they're a bad business person or because, you know, they wouldn't run the franchise properly, but because...
Well, the Rams are being poorly run as it is.
Yeah,
I think it would be okay because you're going to have a lot of players who are going to say, I don't want to play for you,
right,
and go ahead and sign me, but you're not going to get anything out of
right.
me. The only people that, you know, would be beholden to play for them would be the drafted players, and they don't have to re-sign. So,
and we've seen what's happened with that with, you know, like Crabtree up in San Francisco, Eli Manning with, you know,
right.
the San Diego a few years ago.
They are pretty much conscripted. You have to go wherever you're drafted, although there have been a couple of exceptions where
right.
they said, I'm not going to do it. So,
yeah, but, and that wouldn't be in the NFL's right. best interest to have
yeah.
a team that nobody wanted to play for.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
you know, they are after parity after all, pretty
right.
much.
Right.
That's what makes it work.
My gut feeling is he'll make the bid with Checkitz, and he probably will get rejected at some point, or Checkitz might have to just make him a minority owner because there's a lot of people that own like a 5% part of a team where they're, you know, they're basically money.
Well, what
just
about
to
this?
Figure
I
out.
Mean, Limbaugh. The one thing you have to give him credit for is he is an excellent businessman, and he is, in my view, he's more a performer than he is anything else. This is what's comical about so many Republicans who take everything he says as the truth and as gospel and as something that needs to be followed. Because I really, with him, don't believe that he believes a lot of the stuff that he says. I think he's. He just pushes the envelope so that he can, you know, create controversy, and
mm-hmm.
and it's worked pretty well. He makes $60 million a year. That's he's doing all right. So let's just say if that's true, what does Limbaugh do here? He's not going to. I don't think there's any chance he's going to get approved. So do you go through it anyway, and then you're kind of a martyr and look there to your little narrow group? You're look what they're doing because I'm a conservative
yeah.
like you. They're discriminating against me, or does he just not want to go through that and bow out?
He can go through whatever he wants, but if I'm an NFL owner and I'm looking at other prospective owners, I'm saying, who is going to be best for this franchise
well,
and who's
going
to be best for the league?
He's going to get turned down, but right. the question is, what does Limbaugh do?
Oh, I don't think he's going to bail.
I don't think
you
he
think
cares.
He'll stay with it.
Yeah.
That gives him something
probably
to talk
him.
About.
Yeah.
It's all you know, something.
Yeah.
It's another week's worth of topics.
Yeah.
Three
okay,
hours
along
a day.
Those lines of that it's that a lot of this so-called political commentary is really show business. What about the president's? Obviously, this is a calculated move by them. They've decided over the last several months to really identify Fox News as the enemy and to pretty much keep their people off the shows, not cooperate with Fox News, call them out as much as possible. And I wonder if that's a good move or a bad move, because that that seems to play into their hands.
Yeah, it's a good move for Fox. But
I'm
Fox doesn't care.
Fox.
Yeah, and the Obama administration really doesn't care either. Fox has the reputation of being the right wing, the Republican, you know, the
right.
news service.
Which it
they're
is.
Not going to change, which it is. And they're not going to change. They're happy with what they are. They've got a solid core audience.
But would Obama be better off engaging them? Or is it just a waste of time? I think the Obama people's theory is it's not going to do any good. Because the people right. who are hardcore Foxes, there's look, I'm sure half their audience is casual. I mean, I watch Fox, I watch MSNBC, I watch CNN. I check them all out. So casual people like me, though, I think would be interested in the president's views, you know, being articulated by someone who actually supported him rather than through the filter of his opponents. But they've made the decision it doesn't really matter because
right.
and I think Fox audience is so hardcore, they're not going to listen anyway.
And I would agree with that. I mean, because today, as opposed to, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there are so many outlets to get
right.
your message out. If you see one that's just not going to be on your side, mm-hmm. that you're just never going to agree with, it really doesn't do you any good because
Jerry,
you've got too many other avenues for
you. You were a world-famous press secretary.
I think it pays to ignore people sometimes mm-hmm. because you're just – You're just wasting your energy after a while. You can try a couple. You try a little bit, and then when you don't, when you get your words twisted around and you get misquoted, and you, I think it's a waste of time. There's only one of them,
mm-hmm.
and I know they have a core audience. But you're right; most of them aren't listening anyway.
Did you see when Obama, the candidate, went on O'Reilly? I think that went well for him.
I think it gave him a little bump.
Mm-hmm. And Hillary. Did some Fox interviews and came out later and said it was the best interview she had done.
Right.
So I think that there's a fine line.
I think the reason was is because she was running against Obama. And, I mean, on that particular one, I did follow that. And I think the reason is she was running against Obama and pretty much everywhere else she was going, she felt the coverage was slanted for Obama. When she
really?
Got to Fox, they were not slanted toward Obama. They were against Obama. And so she actually got a fair shake, which,
yeah.
I mean, it shows how screwy the world is.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to see a great thing, Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, I don't know if it was last night or the other night, whatever, he took Fox to task, and it's a great piece. On this weekend, there was the big gay rights march in Washington.
Right.
And if you remember about a month ago when the Tea Parties were marching and Fox took out the full-page ad in the Washington
right.
Post, how could CNN and MSNBC and everybody else ignore this? This type of thing. So Stewart did the comparison, and his thing was, how could Fox ignore this gay rights march? Because they did a total time, they timed it out, and all the mentions and stuff throughout the course of the day, it was 3 minutes and 42 seconds that it got total mentions, no live reports, no hits, anything else, and they showed the... when they did mention it one time, they were taking video from ABC out of their Washington, D.C. studio windows. It's like, turn the camera around!
Unbelievable.
He said, they're being fair about this. And he did a thing. He said, kids singing to Obama in New Jersey, whatever the story was.
That's been done 10,000 times.
They rolled out a satellite truck for it, and they had the reporter going, here's where it occurred. They had a blank sidewalk going and blowing this into
here's where the kids
it's
were
a great
singing.
Stewart piece. But, you know, I like John. He goes after everybody.
Yeah. I don't think you can so selectively cover the news like that, for
right.
example, and then complain that you're not being treated as a legitimate news outlet. And I think sometimes they have a reasonable argument when they say, okay, it's one thing that what the administration's doing is lumping their nighttime programming in with their daytime news operation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, a Shepard Smith or somebody who seems to be fairly objective, you shouldn't lump him in with Sean Hannity, who doesn't claim to be objective. So that seems to be a legitimate point. But if Shepard Smith's, you know, however long he's on, if you're going to have 10 million people at marching out in Washington for gay rights and it's not even going to be covered because they think their audience doesn't care about, you know, marching mm-hmm. for gay rights. Well, that's not news. That's more editorial.
By the way, did you see who Fox Business Channel may be going after?
Yeah, they're going after everybody.
Well,
Dobbs, for one.
Yeah, Lou Dobbs
is
their big one because they signed
and who else?
Stossel, John Stossel.
Oh, yeah, well, that makes sense.
And they're showing Don Imus in the morning. But, yeah, Lou Dobbs would be the big one if he moved from CNN because CNN's under
great.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because of
good,
Dobbs.
Then he's not on CNN.
That would be great.
Oh.
I am all for it. Yeah, oh. It's exactly right.
Buffoon.
he's weak.
It just immediately turned him off. I can't even.
No, you can't watch him. But, you know, he puts the CNN reporters in a very tough spot when you watch that, because he is so predictable and so opinionated, which is fine, although he's supposedly doing a news show, I think. I'm not so sure. It's not, but I think he still thinks he's doing a news show. But so one of their reporters will do a story on, probably on immigration, since that's all he talks about. But they'll do a straight story. This is a reporter. And then he says, you know, you do your little... Don't you think this is an example how illegal aliens are ruining America? What do you think? Don't you think that's true?
Well, I'm sorry.
The reporter can't say that.
You're breaking up.
Yeah, so
yeah,
they're like doing the dance. Really wouldn't. Blah, blah. I mean, it's an intolerable situation. So they need to get him off of there. Although, he used to be a business reporter.
He started, I think it was CNN The Business when they first started. And then he went off and did Space.com.
Well, look, if you're going to put Lou Dobbs on the Fox Business Channel, then apparently it's not going to be a business channel. It's going to be more opinion. Unless he's just going to drop his act.
No, his act will get worse.
Protecting America. Yeah, it'll get worse. Because
so
now
boring.
He'll be home. Yeah, okay. Well, okay, let's get... Now, Mr. Lewis here, I think, is a confirmed... around the group here, we have a wide variety of political perspectives. And so when someone comes in and visits, they kind of upset that. And sometimes then they... We lean to the left because of the guests, or we lean to the right because of the guests, and I'm predicting more of a lean to the left here. I'm guessing because we haven't discussed all these things.
I have to admit, like Ellen and Rachel Maddow, I am the L word. A different L word, but an L word.
Rachel
Maddow. That is a different L word. Well, in a sense, we're that L word too, but that's a whole different discussion.
Not that there's anything wrong.
No.
Nothing wrong with that. Said that many times.
This
the
is America. There really
if I was a woman,
anything
I would
wrong
be
with
gay.
Anything.
There's no doubt about that. Wouldn't you, Mark? Would you? If you were a woman, wouldn't you be gay? The grossest thing I can think of is some dude walking in, hey, how's it going? No
yeah,
way.
But I've seen some of the gay women, and they scare me.
More than a dude?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, well, yeah. Whatever.
Not me.
But anyway, here's my question for you. The President of the United States won the Nobel Peace Prize here recently, last week. And that's interesting. Of course, the topic was very interesting. I did, you know, blog on this because within a half an hour, I had seen about 50,000 negative comments from right here and folks in Arizona and across the country that our American president won the Nobel Peace Prize and how outraged they were. Which goes right back to these same people we talked about last week who were cheering when we didn't get the Olympics. And, you know, both sides seem to do this, that, you know, I really believe a lot of liberals were pulling for Bush to fail on all fronts, not just on policy-wise, but, well, even on policy, whether it was good or bad for America, just because they wanted him to fail. And it's clearly the right is doing the same thing with Obama. They want him to fail no matter what. And so I find that pretty disgusting. But forgetting the Nobel Peace Prize and how it works and that it's a pretty liberal outfit, frankly, and we could guess why they did what they did. I'm glad he won. Good for him. Good for us. But it's ironic that this prize was given at the same time that he's got to make this big decision now on where we're going to go on Afghanistan. And he's got a variety of options here. And it's all being played out fairly publicly. I mean, his meetings are obviously private, but the military, much as they did in the 60s, unfortunately, leaked things to put pressure on the president to increase the troops. So can Obama, after winning the Nobel Peace Prize, announce soon thereafter that he's going to increase the number of troops in Afghanistan? Or does it not even matter that he won the Peace Prize to him?
I don't think it should matter to him, and I think it probably doesn't. He's been the president for all of 9 months now, not even 9 months, and he has to deal with about 8 years of unsuccessful, to be kind, policy in Afghanistan. Whether he's won the Peace Prize or anything else shouldn't really cause him to change what he thinks is right and make the decision that he thinks is best for the country. again, he's only been president for 9 months. We had 8 years of really bad policy. First, we were there for a while, announced we had won, and shifted 99% of our resources to Iraq. This is one of the greatest bait and switches in the history of American politics. Oh, they attacked us. Well, wait a minute. They might have attacked us too, or they will attack us if we. So it's very hard to undo 8 years of bad faith in a few months. I think what he might be thinking is no one has ever pacified Afghanistan.
Right.
It's the graveyard of empires. The British were there, and they one of their worst defeats was in Afghanistan. Yep. And then the Russians were there for 10 years, spending many more rubles and many more men than we will ever spend, I think, and they left.
Yep.
So I think he's a very intelligent man, and hopefully he's surrounded by intelligent people who will say, there's no way in the world, unless you want to put a million men here for the next 30 years and educate an entire population that, for the most part, at least the more fundamentalists, refuse to be educated, that we can make this kind of a choice. You need to figure out something new.
I hope the people. I think you make a good point. I think the I hope people don't lose sight of the fact that the president is put in a very difficult situation here, and one that was not of his own making. it's similar to, as we've discussed many times, one of my great weeks on KTAR was I happened to sub when we did the invasion of Iraq, and I was really 100% opposed to that. And their listenership was maybe 99% in favor of it. So it was we definitely lit up the phones. But it seemed to me, and I do say it's very difficult for us out here in the hinterlands to be able to figure out what proper foreign policy is in these difficult situations. So you kind of have to go with your experience, your education, and your gut instinct, and that seemed to be completely wrong to me. Having said that, at a time when everybody was calling for us to withdraw troops from Iraq, I did support McCain in particular, his call to do the surge and to increase there, because it seemed to me we're in a situation where we're in a huge, gigantic mess, and if there's a way to win it, we should try to win it, you know, so-called win it, or make the best of it, and not have it end in complete disaster. And I think that worked out all right. Now, I bring that up because the analogy is to this. I think all of Americans thought it was a good idea to go over there initially, at least for this limited mission to go get the people who did, conspire and carry out the 9/11 attacks. Having said that, that quickly disintegrated into, you know, it was a bait and switch into this ridiculous war in Iraq, which I don't think we've gained anything. People can argue that. I saw Liz Cheney is now making the rounds. It's just outrageous to me that we still have Cheneys around telling us about foreign policy.
We got rid of those.
Oh, apparently not.
No.
And her sister is now going to get in the act again once she has her second kid. So people still defend it, but I think it was a disaster. But here's the president's situation. You know, what do we do now? It's just what you said. What do we do now? How do we resolve this? And this surge idea is being supported by some of the same people that supported the surge before. I did support it before, but this one doesn't quite make as much sense to me because, one, the difficulty of the country and the culture of Afghanistan, the terrain of Afghanistan, and just the amount of the population in Afghanistan is so much more than Iraq that if you just do the numbers, 40,000 troops, 60,000 troops is not even close to an equivalent of what would have what we did in Iraq. So I don't know that it really makes sense. Leaving is fraught with peril there. I don't think the president, he said he's not going to do that. So we're stuck in a big mess here. I would hope we would do something a little more strategic here. And apparently the vice president is pushing that, and he's a smart guy. I think that makes some degree of sense. So if I had to guess, I bet we come out with maybe slightly more troops, some new, but a new look, a new way of trying to do this. But I don't know if it's even possible there.
Well, I think one of the things we failed to do in Iraq was disarm the populace. There aren't any AK-47 factories in Afghanistan. There aren't any C-4 factories in Afghanistan. There aren't any surface-to-air missile factories. At least I'm not aware of any. Mm-hmm. So if we can cut off the flow of arms, however, into the territory between Afghanistan and Pakistan,
right,
then maybe that's a start. Eventually, they'll run out of bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can come at us with knives, and I like the odds.
Right.
Marines against guys with knives. But as long as they can continue to restock with whatever weapons they can pay for, I think it's, again, the terrain is insane.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with scattered little groups of fanatics.
We are. And it's down. I mean, we have had some success here. I mean, it's absolutely incredible that we've been there 8 years. I mean, we're coming up now on the length of the Vietnam War, I think. Which seemed interminable itself. And yet here we still are there with the same lessons never learned, that you don't go into war unless you have the support of the American public, you have a clearly defined mission and a clearly defined victory. What is victory? And yet here we go. You know, we're in there. We don't know. How are you going to tell us what victory is in Afghanistan? I mean,
impossible to define. It's been centuries of failures.
So I think... I hope we come up. I don't think you'll see the surge. Maybe we will. I mean, that's, you know, if you're just doing politics, that's except from the left, and ultimately the left has nowhere to go with Obama. They've got to go with Obama. So it's kind of a no-lose just to do the surge, send in a bunch more troops. I don't think he'll do it, though. I think he's going to do something else, and you know. Maybe it will, you know, maybe it can work. But I agree with you. I don't think the president will take into consideration that he just won the Nobel Peace Prize. He's got another dilemma, one last thing on this, and that is he's got to go over and give an acceptance speech. And, of course, that will be one of the most publicized speeches of the year by anybody.
By the way, he better keep Kanye away. I'm going to let you finish. But first, Gandhi was more of a man of peace.
That would be appropriate if he would jump up. Hey, our boy. I love Kanye, but, I mean, his music, not him. But he's disappeared. What happened to this dude?
God.
He's in rehab, isn't he?
About a month too late.
No, I don't think he's in rehab.
When he was on Leno, he said he was going to take some time off. And
rehab.
But him and Lady Gaga, like...
Yeah, I think he just disappeared. I think he realized I've crossed the line here.
I heard that was they just weren't going to sell any tickets.
Really?
I heard that.
Hmm. I would have gone to that.
Sales on that were such that they went wild.
Really?
Yeah. That they were too big. The venues were too big, and they couldn't sell tickets, so they bailed.
Huh.
I can't believe that. I would think they would sell. Really? Okay, we got to call Danny Z on
that. Yeah, Danny would know.
Okay, speaking of Danny Z.
By the way, on the Peace Prize thing, you know, yes. I knocked him at the time when it happened, but I think that inviting Professor Gates and Officer Crowley up to the White House paid off.
Is that what it was for?
That's what it was for.
I think that's what it was for.
Of course, you know, it gave great fodder to the right and to comedians and everybody else, you know, and they just announced it because he watched a football game. He's won the Heisman Trophy this year already, so... Yeah. I mean, there's a million ugs, on and on. I'm not saying he look. I mean, that's a whole other issue whether he should have won it or not. You know, who knows? He won. Don't worry about it.
No, I was kind of indifferent to it. It's like, hey, congratulations, job with the money you're donating.
Who
to
should
charity.
Have won? By the way, Mother Teresa. They keep Mother Teresa won. There's like one Mother Teresa. She won 1 year. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's kind of like.
I like the doctor that has dedicated his life to going to the Congo and saving women of rape.
Maybe. You know,
that seemed a little...
More peaceful?
That's fine. That's
more
fine.
Peace prizes.
But it's not like he campaigned for this or anything.
No,
it's
they gave it to him. What's he supposed to do?
No, I know.
Can be happy about? That the most leaders in the world don't hate the leader of the United States anymore.
That's a plus.
Mm-hmm. Now maybe they're over the top a little bit, and they were, you know, or maybe they're a bunch of liberals are trying to influence policy somehow. Whatever, isn't it better that they say we're going to give our top prize for peace to the American leader rather than we hate that guy's guts.
Right.
I mean, that seems to be better for our country.
It's an award.
Call me crazy, but that seems better.
Yosemite Sam, Barack Obama.
Yeah, I know.
Fast.
Exactly.
It's an award.
Oh, speaking of which, yes. Where's Woody? What happened to Woody? Is he gone?
Uh-oh. Oh, my God.
Is he, huh? He's over there?
Napping? Wait, hold on.
We need to go get Woody.
Steve, can you grab Woody? Because we're going to do the Woody here. This is going to get me in trouble.
But you'll feed my meter.
Just wait. I'll give you the $2. Yeah. Jesus, guy.
More than that.
Guys. Okay, here he comes. All right.
I bet I can get Rob to feed my meter for me.
I know, David, I know you're going to be very upset by this. I feel bad because I know this. I shouldn't have had you here on this day. So I'll make it up by when we're done with this. We'll talk about Mr. Franklin in Philadelphia. But because this is, I know this is one of your heroes. I don't know, but I'm guessing. I'm guessing this is one of your heroes. So anyway, okay. Well, that music you just heard means it's time for the Woody. Thank you. Carrie's holding the Woody. This week's Woody goes to radio talk show host J.D. Hayworth. Yeah, just a matter of time. Exactly. Wow, this is like Joe Montana coming out of retirement to win another MVP award. Nobody won more Woodies than the former congressman, current and perpetual blowhard J.D. Hayworth, and now he's done it again. This time, he's blatantly violating FEC rules and regs by using his afternoon spot on KFYI to promote his I think I can, Carl from Apache Junction thinks I can, wannabe candidacy against Senator John McCain in 2010. He's the big caboose that couldn't. He won't run, I predict, when it's all said and done because he's not that, he doesn't have the guts to go all in with that little pair of deuces of his. A waiter could beat him with a pair of trays, but JD is a legend in his own mind, so he apparently hasn't figured that out yet. Now, this gives me the opportunity to offer an apology where one has long been overdue, and I'd like to do it right now. Many years ago, I was credited with being the first to peg J.D. as a human foghorn leghorn. And that name seems to have stuck for almost a couple of decades now. J.D. has told many, many people he thinks this comparison is unfair and a cheap shot. And I've thought it over, and I agree. What's right is right. So, I hereby apologize to Foghorn Leghorn for ever comparing him to J.D. Hayworth. It was a low blow. Foghorn was no bigot. He didn't see the Frito Bandito behind every Chevy. The Fogster was a blowhard, yes, but at least he had the common sense that God gave a chicken. And although he strutted around the chicken yard belittling the little guys, he knew not to cross the line and mess with a growling dog chained up across the way. J.D. seems to want to tangle with the big dog. So I say, come on over, big fella. Once big fella. This could be fun. But get off the public airwaves and pay your own way. Until then, the delusional, megalomaniacal former congressman who was crushed by a former high school history teacher from Tempe, J.D. Hayworth, gets the Woody.
Wow.
Ouch. There's no love lost there, is there?
That one stings.
You know what? Maybe he should be a senator because he's got great judgment. I'll just give one example. You know, he used to be huge, super fat guy, eating everything in sight. And he decided, this is bad, I need to lose some weight. So he had two choices. He has to make one of these choices. One, I can undergo a life-threatening operation where I could actually die, pay a lot of money, be hospitalized, risk death, or I could put down the fork. He chose to risk life. No, I don't think that's the sort of decision-making we need in Congress.
It's the Carney Wilson option.
Yeah, well, he's actually thinking about, he's got his buddies, and he's trying to hook up with Glenn Beck and people like that and say, we're going to have a national movement here, and we're going to punish McCain for trying to do anything on immigration that doesn't basically, you know, round everybody up and send them home.
Well, and this should also be a message to the Democrats, too, because McCain would win the primary. I'm confident of that. But I think J.D. could, you know, take a couple of chunks out of McCain because of how the Republicans vote in the primary here. The Democrats should have a legitimate, viable candidate to run against John McCain for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's been there for a long time. I mean, Right. I would be stunned today if McCain doesn't win re-election next year, but stranger things have happened.
He'll win. Democrats are looking around. There's a couple guys, city councilmen's looking at it, people like that. But the real brawl, obviously, would be in the primary. As I said, I predict Hayworth will not run because he didn't have the guts to run. He can hide behind the mic and, again, talk to Carl from Apache Junction and say, man, isn't this a great idea? And Carl will say, yeah, you're great, J.D., we need you. And Mexicans are ruining this country. And, yeah, they sure are, But at the end of the day, he'll get crushed.
By the way, we have an update on a former guest today, Neil Giuliano, who was on a couple months ago. Posted on his Facebook account today, put a nice posting up there. But after considering a lot of options, he will not be running for governor next year.
A little pressure applied there, you think?
I think there may have just been a little bit.
Talking to several people.
Yes.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting process.
But the Democrats do that in this state now. They haven't done it until recently, but over the last 10 years, they actually have some brains about it. They say, why don't we figure out who our best candidate is, who might win, and we'll all get behind that person. So Republicans, let's have a free-for-all, and then some guy will win with 14% of the vote, and the president will come out and mispronounce his name, which would have happened last time, and somehow we'll lose.
And you may see that again next year, because Goddard obviously now has the Democratic nomination, although it isn't official. The Republicans, whether Jan Brewer runs or not,
they're going to have a primary.
They're going to have a crowded primary.
Unger's in.
Whoever wins that.
Parker's in.
Yeah. That's going to bloody up whoever wins it.
Lee Martin's in.
Ooh.
Why don't you jump in? Come on, Grant.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a stellar crowd.
You can get 6% of the Republican vote these days.
Independents vote in the primary here, remember.
That's true.
And there is no Democratic primary.
That's true.
There won't be.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting.
So
now, speaking of statesmen, J.D., I want to finish up talking about Mr. Franklin of Philadelphia. Isn't that just sick that we go from the John Adams and Ben Franklin's and James Madison, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and now we're talking about J.D.
Come a long way.
Yeah, that's great. It's great. We've really done well here.
Thank God the Constitution was framed when it was.
Yeah, what would it look like today?
Wow.
The framers. I didn't know you could get illegal alien in the
Constitution.
In the preamble.
It would be framed in stucco.
It would be. Now, I got a bunch of questions for you, David. First, if people want to go, where can they get tickets anyway?
They can go to showup.com.
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 Okay.
Which is a service that tickets for all different local entertainment and art events.
Okay.
They can come to our website, which is Sasha, that's S-A-S-H-A productions.org.
Can we put that up? Okay, we'll put that up on our website there. So if you're just listening on iTunes or you just downloaded it, just go to grantwoods.com and we'll have a little link there.
And there's a link on our website to the Phoenix Theater ticketing. They're doing our ticketing in addition to Show-Up's doing some ticketing. And
okay.
So beautiful. We don't actually ticket ourselves, but we have a couple of ways to
now
do that.
Now tell me this Playhouse on the Park. Tell me about that, because I've never been there.
Well,
ground floor of the Viad Tower.
Yeah, it's been there for, 15 or 20 years. It was originally, I think, designed as one of those multi-purpose facilities.
Okay.
And
the Viad Tower, when John Teets had that thing done, that thing was the greatest. I mean, they had kind of state of the art.
It was the Trump Tower back then.
It was beautiful.
Well, there's supposed to be two of them, and where that other parking lot is where the second tower was going to go up, and where the theater is was actually sort of a link between the two tower that they built and tower that they never built. It's an interesting space. It has some eccentricities that anybody who performs there has to deal with, but that's okay.
Right.
The Black Theater Troupe uses it.
Okay.
Teatro Bravo, I think, has used it in the past. The Jewish Theater was a regular tenant for many years.
Okay.
They moved out a couple of seasons ago.
And this starts, I'm looking, October 22nd through the 25th, so is that a weekend?
Yeah, it's Thursday through Saturday night, and then Sunday matinees from October 22nd through November 15th.
Okay, got it. Beautiful. All right, now, you not only are you starring in this, but you wrote it.
Yes.
So the interest in Benjamin Franklin, tell us about that. Now, there was a big biography of Franklin that came out, a year or so ago, and did very well, I think.
A couple of years ago, Walter Isaacson. There have been several biographies of Franklin.
That was a bestseller. People were very interested in Franklin. So what drew you to Benjamin Franklin?
Well, one of the things is what you just said as a partial introduction. How did we have so many outstanding men in a very small nation 200 years ago? That's a question that John Kennedy asked Gore Vidal one day, is how did they do it? I look around and I see who I have to deal with today. And I think things were probably better then than they are now,
even
50 years ago. How did they do it?
Yeah.
And I think one of Vidal's answers was, well, some of them had slaves to do all the work, and so they spent a lot of time
reading.
And there weren't all the distractions that you have today, 500 channels and the internet and multiple things to take your mind off of study. There was less to read. So more people read the few things that were available, and it was an age of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. We were coming out of the Dark Ages into the Renaissance, and then into the Age of Enlightenment, and this whole spirit of change and hope were in the air. So he struck me as an interesting person. I wrote down a few ideas several years ago, and then a couple of years ago, my son went back on his seventh grade trip to Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. I was one of the chaperones, and I thought, well, this would be a good time to take some books with me and just make notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was finishing another play, and I decided, well, I have notes. Rather than starting something completely from scratch, I'll see what I can do with this, and one thing led to another, and I ended up with a one-man show about Benjamin Franklin.
Now, challenge as a writer, and again, you and I have written together. You're just an outstanding writer. Looking at the challenge of a one person is that you're the only one in this, right?
Yeah, that's. This is all you get.
Yes. Okay. So the challenge. I've read some plays. The Thurgood, I think, was the name of it. Thurgood Marshall play. Clarence Darrow play. Henry Fonda starred in. As a writer, you know, what are the challenges there to keep the audience's interest and keep the action going there, such as it is when you've got basically one subject matter, and you've got one actor.
Well, hopefully you have an interesting subject.
Right.
I think the most successful one-man or one-woman show ever has been Mark Twain Tonight.
Hal Holbrook.
And Mr.
That's
Holbrook has, through the years, absorbed many, many hours of Mark Twain, and he can pick and choose what he wants. It's kind of like Bruce Springsteen. Tonight we're going to play these 10.
Right.
We know them all. Tonight we're going to do these 10, and I might change in the middle. And Holbrook can do that.
It's cheaper now because he doesn't have to wear makeup now.
Hey, that's true. He was in his late 20s when he started that.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Now,
full deal. Now
no wonder
like
he knows it.
Yeah, well, I have to go with the wig and lots of
it's probably good looking
makeup.
At the picture.
So
this guy looks like Robert Trent Jones Jr.
You need somebody who has a variety of interests, hopefully with a sense of humor.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know whether Clarence Darrow had a sense of humor. I don't know whether Emily Dickinson had a sense of humor. I don't
not really
remember
in
those
the
shows.
Play. I did read that play in the last year, that Darrow play. Not so much, but he had one. There's an advantage as a writer in that he gave a lot of great closing arguments. And so you could just dip right into those in famous cases.
Yeah.
Whereas, I guess with Franklin, maybe speeches or things like that.
Well, Franklin.
But not so much, I wouldn't think, with him.
Was a man of varied interest. He was, of course, an inventor. He invented the catheter. He was the first person to chart the Gulf Stream.
How do you invent that?
Well,
went wrong?
He had a relative with a problem, and nobody else had come up with a solution, and he started fiddling around with some, I believe, copper tubing.
Ouch.
Well, it was
never
a primitive
heard that.
Time.
There's a scene.
Wow.
Let's not choose that one on Friday.
No, that's not in the play.
Okay.
There are a lot of things
that
don't
hurt to do that.
Yeah, because it's
maybe
a
someday,
play.
Though.
Well, you'd have
to
self-catheterize.
If we take it to Vegas, we'll put that in.
You could do that.
For the late show. And he invented the bifocals.
The highlights. Yeah. You know, if you took it to Sun City, that could be a very popular
that
part
would
of the
be
play.
My target audience, his contemporaries. I'd like that. He did a lot of things. He was the first, I think, truly self-made man, because he was the 10th son of a candle maker. And by the time he died, he was the most famous American in the world.
Wow.
And he did it all by himself, which is interesting. Because
what about the kite and the key thing? Is that a possible?
That happened, but prior to that, he had been experimenting in other ways with electricity.
Was he like rebelling in a way against his father, the candle maker?
I think he was rebelling
Stop.
Against being the 10th son.
Yeah.
And being... a more open individual in a very closed Puritan society.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines is in the play is, I had to get out of Boston to breathe. Those pious Puritan spirits were smothering me. God bless them. So he was apprenticed to his brother. His brother got mad at him. His brother fired him. His brother then blackballed him with all the other print shops in Boston. So he said, okay, I'll leave. Hmm. He was 17.
Okay.
He went to New York. No work there. He went to Philadelphia. He had a series of false starts, and by the time he was 40, he could retire because he came up with Poor Richard's Almanac,
right,
which everybody had to have. And
right.
It was full of clever things.
Stitch many of Time, his, Saves Nine.
Many were his and many he borrowed.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very willing to admit, not all of these are mine, but why use my own bad words when other ones are already at hand, is what he said. So by the time he was 40, he was ready to do other things, and that's when he really began his inventing and his political involvement. So he
really was a Renaissance man then.
He was. Mm-hmm. It was late for the Renaissance, but I guess in the New World it was probably the right time for somebody like that.
And he was married?
He was he had a common law marriage. His wife had been abandoned by her husband, and since they couldn't prove or disprove that the man was still alive, the best solution, the only solution, was that they lived together as common law husband and wife.
What happened to the dude? I mean, Ben Franklin can't find out?
Well, they didn't have
Googled him,
private
but nothing
detectives.
Came up.
They didn't have the internet. You couldn't put in.
So you had to actually have like a body or a death certificate.
Apparently.
Or,
maybe it was just Franklin's way of keeping one door open. I don't know.
That sounds more likely.
Why buy the cow? Jeez.
Well, he spent a lot of time away from his family.
Sure. What about him in Europe?
Well, one of the things that we aren't taught in school is that all of our founding fathers were human beings. Mm-hmm. They had all the flaws of a typical selection of human beings. And one of Franklin's flaws was he really didn't want to spend that much time at home. He loved being in London because he was surrounded by interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
He was famous at this point because of the lightning. The lightning rod was another one of his inventions. And when he got to London as the colony's agent to negotiate, every door was open to Benjamin Franklin. He received all kinds of awards and honorary degrees. And this was like mother's milk to him, to meet interesting people and have conversations about everything, because he was interested in everything. So he stayed over there for a long, long time. And he came home briefly when the war started to help write the Declaration. And then he was sent back to France to be the American ambassador, because without money, we would have no revolution. And he was considered by some to be America's greatest diplomat of all time.
Right.
Because without gold and ships and cannon and men from the French, we wouldn't have won that war.
And he got along pretty well over there with those people, right?
Well, he taught himself how to speak French. He taught himself how to speak a little Italian and a little Spanish. Now, John Adams said that Franklin had awful French.
Mm-hmm.
Just terrible French, but they didn't get along.
Right, and where Adams kind of struggled over there to fit in and play the game, Franklin didn't have that problem, did he?
Well, Franklin was, I hate to say it, but a liberal man. He was enlightened and he was an open man, and John Adams, while he was in many ways a great man, just couldn't see the possibilities of an open and free society as regards women, as regards relationships between men and women, as regards a lot of things.
Right.
So you have a man who was, while the good man, well, as Franklin said, he's in some ways he is absolutely out of his senses. Adam's idea of diplomacy was to make demands.
Right.
You don't do that to the king. You know, Franklin knew that we'll go to dinner. I'll agree with you. I'll laugh at your jokes. I'll talk to your ministers. We'll have a discussion. We'll make compromises, and I'll get what I want eventually. Mm-hmm. And Adams would come in and say, we need this. We need it right away. You've got to give this to us. That's no way to talk to a king.
Right.
So, and I think because he was usually the smartest guy in the room, Franklin was comfortable with everybody.
Right.
He was happy in a tavern with a bunch of tradesmen, and he was very comfortable with the kings and the dukes and the fine ladies of any court he went to.
Amazing. What a life. It's going to be great. I can't wait to see it. And one more question for you that baffles me, again, reading the other thing that struck me in reading some of these one-person plays. How do you memorize all those lines? Because it's... It's an, I mean, to me, I just don't see it.
Well,
so, I mean, technique-wise, how do you do? Have you ever, you've acted a long time. Do you not have a problem? You've never had that problem? Or is it
luckily, Franklin invented the teleprompter.
Yeah, that was one of his later inventions. And the earpiece, so I can be fed my cues. Actually, I found on this show, since I wrote it, it was pretty easy to memorize.
Yeah.
I've been working on it for a couple months, just the memorization. But that also means that I can change lines to whatever they
come out as.
Right.
That's true.
If I misspeak and it still makes sense, well, that's the way the line is tonight.
That's great.
Right.
And we're just going to move on.
Okay.
But... that's
yeah, but even though you write it yourself, so what? I mean, you know, I forget words to songs I wrote, and I wrote it, so I mean.
Yeah, but it's somewhere in your brain.
Yeah, it's in there.
It's in a written form.
Sure.
You write it, and then you type it. It's stored in different parts of your brain, and then when you try to memorize it, it can come in great big chunks.
Is that how you do it, then? You just take pieces of it?
Oh, yeah.
And learn it?
In any show, you start
off...
together. Well, people memorize in different ways. For me, I just do it in big chunks.
Right.
And
another difference between you and not remembering your songs you wrote, and you know, you probably wrote this sober.
For the most part. Not entirely, but sure. And I'll try to act it sober, too,
good.
For the most part.
Good. All right. Well, I hope, you know, I hope it's a big success. I'm confident it will be. It's very exciting.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I hope we can get people to come out for it.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we want everybody to go. So, and it's important to support local theater. And one thing that you know is that a lot of people who don't know is that the theater community in the valley here. Is really pretty substantial. It's surprising. Whereas other areas of culture, you might question, you know, Phoenix is pretty late to the party. The theater community is pretty strong here. There's a lot of venues. There's a lot of different acting groups out there, and I believe a very high level of performance here in the valley. I think it's right up there with most places. So, and you're part of that.
Well, we're trying.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're doing our best.
One last question. Did you watch the John Adams series on HBO, and what did you think of that, if you did watch it?
I thought it was very interesting. I wish they had done it about Jefferson or about Franklin, frankly, because as much as I like Paul Giamatti as an actor, I thought the character was just kind of a drip. His wife was lovely, and I understood why... he loved her, but I wasn't exactly sure why she loved him.
That's usually the question in a marriage.
Carrie can relate to that.
Wow. Let me tell you. No, just kidding.
And that's why Carrie's gay.
Well, God, I think that's a show.
Wow. I think that's a show, too. All right, guys. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.